Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report. I am here with one of my favorite guests, Kathy Reisenwitz. Kathy, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Kathy is an editor at Young Voices and a DC-based writer, and she's a political commentator. She's the editor-in-chief of Sex in the State, and her writing has appeared in Forbes, Chicago Tribune, Vice Motherboard, Reason Magazine, Talking Points Memo, and other publications. She's also appeared on Fox News with John Stossel and Al Jazeera America. Kathy, welcome back.
Thank you.
So you wrote a piece, it's called Thinking I'm a Badass When I'm Really Just a Bitch. What? What is that all about, Kathy? What were you trying to say with this piece?
It was kind of a lot. There have been a lot of thoughts jumbling around in my head about...
Seem conflicted.
Yeah, of course. Okay. I mean, that's the thing is, it's very difficult to look at who you are, see what you've done wrong, realize that you're going to hate yourself in 10 years, but still be who you need to be and still do the work you need to do, despite the fact that you're not really that good at it yet.
Mm. That's all about intellectual honesty. And I do a lot of that self-introspection as well. You know, when I went to work at Fox, actually, it was a big learning curve for me because I was suddenly surrounded by people who were way smarter than me. I went from being an activist on the streets to, you know, being a pretty good, you know, guy with my layman knowledge, you know, and maybe rising to the top of the heap of the activists, to then being in a professional organization where I found myself subject to intense scrutiny. And I'm sure you're probably facing that right as well, because your work is being read by tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of people, so you find yourself under scrutiny. So how has the lens of the masses sort of affected you, would you say?
I mean, it's fascinating, the issue of feedback, mm-hmm. right? It's very, very difficult as someone who puts themselves out there in any way, shape, or form to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff, mm-hmm. to say, okay, this person is giving me some really valuable insight to how I'm being perceived versus this person is just angry because I've hit on a nerve of something that they need to realize. Mm-hmm. It's something that people who put themselves in the spotlight in any way just have to get good at. And it's easy to go to one end or the other to say, oh, everyone's right, I'm awful, I should stop. Mm-hmm. Or no one has anything to say, I'm not listening to my critics and I'm just going to go forward.
Right.
To do anything in the middle is extraordinarily difficult, but is what makes the difference between someone who excels and gets better over time versus right. someone who stagnates.
Right, and you know, sometimes we're wrong, but then you also have to kind of contrast with the fact that, you know, great spirits have always encountered violent opposition from mediocre minds. And so we sort of like to, as libertarians or people who put themselves out there, public figures, we kind of like to wrap ourselves in that cloak and say, well, you know, the masses are stupid. And then other times, you know, the masses really are right. And so it's important to sort of look at it and say, hey, you know, you've got to watch yourself on this. And I think maybe a good example of that was that, you know, again, I'll bring it back to my experience at Fox, was that when I was learning as a journalist was that I had to be very careful what I said, because every statement is scrutinized. And if you say something that's not true, you have to say, or if you're alleging something, you have to use allegedly. You have to be very careful because somebody's going to call you out with 2 million people watching every show, you know, so there's going to be a lot of scrutiny there. One of the things that you talked about in your piece, which I thought was interesting, was you talked about you kind of feel like you have big fish, little pond syndrome. Can Right. you tell us what that's all about?
Absolutely. So just as kind of to back up a little bit, I grew up solidly GOP, voted for George W. Bush when I cast my first presidential ballot, and then over time began to realize that the GOP was not and probably was never going to line up with what I really believed as far as limited government, property rights, individual liberty. And so, and also, it's just such a monolith. I mean, when you look at the entirety of conservative thought, or you look at the entirety of the GOP, trying to make any difference there just seems so impossible. Mm-hmm. But you get this smaller group of people who are a little closer to your ideology and your ideals, and you think, you know, this is a group I can work with. These are some people who are rational, who mm-hmm. are open to what I have to say. And so it's difficult. I mean, you want to balance the two. You want to make a difference. You know, if you influence the GOP, there is a possibility that you can actually do more good because you're reaching more people. But then trying to make any difference in that larger pond is extraordinarily difficult in comparison. So just trying to realize that sometimes when you're taking these iconoclastic stances and you're saying, you know, screw the GOP, I'm a libertarian and I'm only going to talk to other libertarians, mm-hmm. there's good in that, but there's also some kind of self-aggrandizement in that as well.
I'm guilty of that. You know, I certainly have been called an iconoclast in many ways because some of the things that I do is to call out conspiracy theories, for example, things like the assassination of JFK or chemtrails or 9/11, and people say, well, this is libertarian issues. Well, I tend to disagree, but, you know, there are a lot of people out there who hold to these positions. And so I think that there's room for what you're talking about, reforming a movement to make it sharper, to make it better. And I've certainly engaged in that as well. So if, you know, if you're guilty of that sin, then, you know, throw me in with you in that pile. But then it becomes more difficult when we criticize things that are more natural libertarian stances that everybody sort of agrees with, not chemtrails or things like that, things like the non-aggression principle.
Right.
The non-aggression principle is like the holy, you know, mighty Rothbardian, you know, thing that we hold on to. It's the ideal for libertarians, we like to say. And I have found there are some legitimate criticisms of it. Matt Zwolinski wrote, I think, a piece on Bleeding Heart Libertarians
right.
that was a fantastic, not refutation of the non-aggression principle, but basically it was saying that there are some issues with it. Here's what they are. And so I sympathize with you, Kathy, when you're criticizing libertarians for some of their issues. And certainly, you know, when you're talking about issues like feminism and sexism and racism, some people who are sexist, some people who are racist, they will cling to the libertarian philosophy, or people who are maybe they're anti-Semites because they hate the Fed and they think that the Jews are controlling everything, you know, or whatever. I be careful about lumping these people together necessarily because I think they're individual problems.
Sure.
But I sympathize with you and your willingness and your desire to reform the libertarian movement. But I think I disagree that you could have a bigger impact, because I think that the GOP right now is very reformable. And as a matter of fact, I think that Republicans need people like you, and they need people like you because they will soon face a battle with Hillary Clinton, and that will be the day when millions of racists suddenly turn into sexists. So what I want to know is, Kathy, and then I want to talk about some issues, like hardcore issues after this, is what I want to know is that, you know, where will you find yourself in 2016 when all the banner of feminism will be waved by someone like Hillary Clinton, and you will find yourself with all your libertarian friends maybe waving the banner of constitutional conservatism on the other side? What are you going to do? Because you, as someone who is, I would say, a thought leader in the liberty movement from your sector of things, you're writing a book about this, Free Market Feminism.
Thank you.
You know, how can you have an impact on the debate in 2016 that libertarians won't see as some sort of betrayal?
Well, I'm clearly not super concerned with libertarians thinking that I'm betraying them,
okay.
But... No, I just started a column at townhall.com. I'm going to be publishing there every Monday. And I think it's going to kind of focus on how do we make a GOP that's more effective.
Mm-hmm.
And by effective, I mean actually accomplishes anything vaguely related to limiting the size and scope of government. And so the first column was about how whether income inequality should matter is beside the point, and telling people that they shouldn't care about it is never going to be a winning strategy.
Mm.
Recognize that people do care about it, recognize why they care about it, and go from there
mm-hmm.
when you're talking to them about it.
Good point. Very good point.
So that's kind of going to be my something that I'm going to try to incorporate into my thinking and speaking going forward is...
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking for ways to be more efficient and effective in our messaging to mm-hmm. whomever.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about some fun stuff. Now, it's the 10-year anniversary of Mean Girls, and everybody's talking about it. I've been reading all these articles today about feminism and Mean Girls, and one of the big questions that I think people are throwing out there 10 years on is, are women their own worst enemy?
Oh my gosh, this is so funny. I just published a piece in Reason about the exorbitant cost of daycare.
Oh yes, tell us.
And so, you know, of course, my market, my audience is mostly free marketers. Uh-huh. And I would think that everyone would be like, yeah, screw the state. No,
what's the premise?
Well, the premise is that, unfortunately, we've got a situation in America where regulations drive up the cost of daycare mm-hmm. through complying with regulations and just creating barriers to entry. Mm-hmm. And so it's now more expensive to care for an infant mm-hmm. 8 hours a day, or less than 8 hours a day, usually, than it is to send someone to college.
Interesting.
Yeah, in like 30 states.
This is why Democrats argue for things like universal pre-K care, you know?
Exactly. And Republicans just ignore it and say, oh, mom should stay home. Well, neither of those approaches is right. Oh. We need to get the government out of daycare. What's even more horrific than that is the fact that rich women get around this by hiring illegal immigrants as domestic. It's true. It's on record.
Interesting.
That's what they're doing. And what I didn't mention in the article, which I wish that I had, is that rich women are also much more likely to have access to an extended family, uh-huh. which will also provide them with very low cost or free childcare, which poor women often don't have. And so so I'm thinking, okay, you know, I've made the case. It's very clear. The enemy is the state. No, people are using this article as an opportunity to reignite the mommy wars. Mm. Oh, well, why should you put your kids in a warehouse anyway?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, so listen, ladies and gentlemen, or especially gentlemen of the Republican Party, these are issues that I think Kathy Reisowitz has hit on that you guys need to pay attention to. If you want to get more women involved in the Republican Party and involved in the liberty movement, you're going to have to speak to issues like this. Another issue that we've talked about before that I think is worthy of reiterating is the issue of over-the-counter birth control that we've talked about before. And that's an issue that libertarians can say, hey, you know, this is a war on drugs. Women should be able to have the right to do whatever they want. But the problem here is that all of a sudden all the libertarians we agree, we're like, yeah, end the war on drugs, but then the conservatives are kind of like, my religion, you know, kind of like, you know, we've got a problem here because within the free market movement is this panoply of people who some are very religious, some are not.
Sure.
And so how can we possibly so if you're going to use rhetoric that people agree with right off the bat, what would you say to a strict, staunch Catholic, you know, anti-birth control type? How would you convince them? How would you start a conversation with them that you agree with, that to find something that you agree with, to convince them that over-the-counter birth control is an issue that they should support or at least not oppose?
I mean, if they're okay with using the state to assuage their conscience, then it's probably not a conversation that we're going to get anywhere with. But if not, if they are of the opinion that instead of using the state to get between a woman and her birth control, or not even get between, but just create one more hoop that a woman has to jump through, then maybe the better way to try to convince people to not use birth control is through education, as opposed to the legal means. And then one thing that I think that conservatives of that ilk will have to contend with is the harder you make it to have birth control in a woman's hand, the more likely she is to get pregnant and abort it.
Well, you shouldn't be having sex before marriage.
Well, that works.
Right, exactly.
So, but really, I don't think that this is a question of ideology, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very, very tiny minority of conservatives who actually have any problem with a woman using birth control. Mm-hmm. I think what it is, it's an issue of focus. Mm-hmm. If we make it an issue of focus, we will piss off that tiny minority, and we care more about
Rick Santorums.
We care more about shutting up Santorum than helping women.
Right.
And that's a problem.
Wow, interesting. Okay, let me switch gears here, pivot. I want to talk about something that we had that had enormous controversy this week, because we talked about an article that was written in the Brisbane Times. This is an Australian article, and basically this woman says, I don't care if it's sexist, but I don't want my children to sit next to a man on an airplane.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, all the men's rights fedora guys are like, no. But I mean, like, I try to put myself in the shoes of this guy. Now, you try with me to put yourself in the shoes of this guy. Like, you know, me, innocent guy, getting on an airplane. Like, I like kids. You know, I would talk to kids. Like, I used to talk to kids until it's Stranger Danger became, you know, every man's a pedophile. So, I mean, like, what do you think about it? Like, how would you feel if you were a man and all of a sudden, like, a flight attendant is kind of like, sir, you're going to have to move. It's kind of like, like you would feel like, what if somebody was doing that to you if you were a Muslim? You know what I mean? It's like, sure. Oh, you're getting on an airplane because you're Muslim. Like,
sure.
Like, what do you think about an issue like that?
I mean, I would do anything to not have to sit next to a child on a plane, personally.
That's true.
But, no, I mean, again, and we've talked about this before, and it falls into the same category of, you know, discrimination on what we realize is an arbitrary basis in no way, shape, or form, you know, counteracts or disproves that there's other discrimination on arbitrary bases. I think we, as free marketers, we like to have this label of, you know, rational thinkers and critical thinkers. This is a great opportunity to recognize that, you know, I see a lot. Here's a good analogy. In fact, this was used just yesterday, you know, using evolutionary psychology and a very limited understanding of biology to justify discrimination against women,
mm-hmm.
to justify, you know, the misogyny in what we often term purity culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the ties are about as tenuous
mm-hmm.
between evolutionary psychology and biology and discriminating against women and the misogyny and purity culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is truth to that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't justify this.
Mm-hmm.
And there's truth to the fact that most pedophiles are men, and it doesn't justify this.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right, right. So it's a difficult issue for sure, and it's one that I think that probably shines a lot of light on what you're talking about. There is discrimination that goes on, and maybe, you know, if there's a male privilege as you describe it, then you know, males can see what it's like to be discriminated against, and it doesn't feel too good. It doesn't necessarily mean that we want the government involved, but these are cultural issues that we have to combat, Kathy, and we're not saying that we want the government to be involved in enforcing these things, but what we do is we have to say, you know, these things exist, these are problems, and we should combat them in a cultural way. You know what, that brings to mind another topic that came up. There's this new campaign, which I revolt against immediately as a matter of principle, because the people who always are waving these banners are Marxists. But there's this thing they say, no homo. You know, you can't use the word no homo.
Right, right.
You know, and you know, you can't say bitch, and you can't
sure.
say things like that. It's like, come on, like, culture is about like loose slang and terms and things like that. We didn't used to be like these little, like, you know, weenies. I feel like we're just like weenies. Like, we can't say no homo. Like, there's something about it that I think normalizes the word homo. And like, if anything, it gives men a chance to bond with each other in a way, like in a more loving way, perhaps, than we were in the past. And I think that there's a problem here. So, I mean, what do you think about these kinds of efforts to what I would call stifling free speech? I mean, is it offensive or what?
Well, I would first say that asking someone to not use a particular term is in no way a violation of free speech. We need,
right.
just like we need to make it very clear that though we advocate for cultural change, we do not advocate for using the state to do so. We need to understand that there is a huge and important distinction between asking for calls or for calling for civility,
mm-hmm.
for calling for language change, and for advocating for actual force
mm-hmm.
in what someone can and can't say.
Okay, well, your article was called, "I'm Really Just a Bitch." You call yourself a bitch.
Yeah,
but I mean,
absolutely.
Is that okay, or like, is that
well,
not okay?
I mean, it kind of depends on what you mean by okay. I mean, I definitely understand the argument that we should not ask people to make changes in language because we need to know when people are misogynistic. We need to know when people are homophobic.
So if I was like, "Hey, bitch, what's up?" That's not me being misogynist, and that's okay to use "bitch" in that sense. But then, like, if somebody was like, "Listen, Kathy, you're a bitch." Like, and that's like, how do you delineate? That's the problem.
I mean,
because you're basically saying, well, I can call myself a bitch, and you're like, and you need to know when somebody's misogynist. It's sort of like, when do we move? How do we do this? Like, people, it's like you don't know how to act around someone because it's constantly changing the rules of the. You're moving the goalposts. It feels like, Kathy.
Well, the alternative is untenable. I mean, yeah, language is context dependent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the reality of the situation.
True. Very true.
So, but kind of the larger point I was making is that, you know, we need to recognize the pros and cons of calls for civility. We need to understand that they're not violations of free speech, but they can be stifling. But we also need to recognize, you know, what we're talking about when we talk about, for example, trigger warnings.
Oh.
Right?
Right.
This is for the benefit of someone who is a survivor of trauma,
mm-hmm.
right? We're not asking you, you know, to not say what you're going to say, mm-hmm. or to, you know, go all the way around someone who's basically like lying in the street. Mm-hmm. It's a request to not kick them as you walk over them. Mm-hmm. And that people are so upset about being asked nicely to not kick someone as they walk over them, mm-hmm. is insane to me and okay. kind of offensive.
Interesting. I don't really get too much into that. I haven't really waded into the trigger warning debate much, a little bit, but I've never obviously heard this way of putting it. I think that's definitely something that's respectable and something in a civilized debate we should have. But I do, we're going forever. I could talk to you for hours, Kathy, because I'm always fascinated by your point of view on things. I think you have very important points that you make. I don't always agree with you, but I think that you have you make some very fascinating points a lot of times. But I want to talk to you about what you're getting into now, because you're talking about writing a book, and you're talking about writing a book called Free Market Feminism. Okay, so the thing is that most people, when they think feminism, they think Marxism, and they think socialism. I think a book about free market feminism, that has sounds to me like it really has potential. But you don't have a graduate degree. Tell me, Kathy, what is free market feminism? Why is it important? What do you want to tell? What do you have to tell the world?
Oh, gosh, I need to get my elevator pitch ready, but yeah, I'll give it a whirl. No, I mean, I think that exactly, you said before, you know, I don't want to talk about this because it's only Marxists talking about it. Mm-hmm. Well, if you've got some issues that the majority or a large percentage of voters care about, mm-hmm. and only one side of the aisle is even talking about those mm-hmm. issues, mm-hmm. you've lost those people, mm-hmm. right? And I think we've got a lot of people who the free market community has just lost mm. because we're not talking about their issues, mm. because we're either ignoring them or we're actively hostile to them. Mm-hmm. And I think one such constituency is single women. Mm. Single women, the divide between men and women and as far as their voting patterns is much smaller than the divide between the voting patterns of single and married women. Mm-hmm. The GOP and any kind of free market ideology is just, they're just dead to them. Mm-hmm. And so with free market feminism, what I'm trying to do is to demonstrate that markets are for everyone, and that markets are capable of addressing and solving some of the issues that women hold dear. And so again, with the childcare debate, instead of talking about stay at home versus go to work, why don't we talk about, hey, more choices for everyone,
right?
And that's what the market is. It's more and better choices for everyone, mm-hmm. including and especially single women.
Oh, I love that. I really love these ideas. I think people should definitely go and check out your column. That at first, it's at Reason, right? As well as KathyReisenwitz.com?
Absolutely.
Okay, check out that about mothers and the issue of the state regulating child care. That's a big issue. I think more people need to hear more about that. And take a look at the other issues, the war on drugs and the right of women to be able to use birth control as they see fit. So you Republican guys out there, you guys need to pay attention to these issues, because I have no idea how you're going to beat Hillary Clinton unless you change course on some of these things. And I'm open to it. I'm not always right, and I'm certainly open to have a debate, and there's a lot of things that I could learn. So Kathy Reisenwitz, I think, is doing a great job about it. You can learn more about her at KathyReisenwitz.com, R-E-I-S-E-N-W-I-T-Z, Kathy Reisenwitz, Kathy with a C, KathyReisenwitz.com. And thank you very much for coming and listening to us. I really appreciate you guys. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. You can also get us on Stitcher if you've got an Android app. Don't forget every single day to come back to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com.